Hello, everybody, and welcome to F1 Nation with me, Tom Clarkson.
Me, Natalie Pinkham.
And Pedro de la Rosa.
Guys, how are you?
Muy bien. Very good. Thank you, Tom. Hello, Natalie. Nice to see you again.
It's lovely to see you again. It's been a while, actually.
We're here to talk all things Qatar Grand Prix. But before we do that, Pinks and I were both in Japan. You weren't, Pedro. What did you make of the Japanese Grand Prix and, well, the performance of Max Verstappen in particular?
Well, I think that it was not a surprise, really, no, to see Max dominating again in a circuit that was very much built or designed for the Red Bull strengths, and especially also to his strength, because how quick he was through the S's was mind-blowing. I mean, if you look at the speed differential of Max against anyone else through the S's was stunning. And then after that, if you are quick through the S's, you control a bit the slide of the car through the S's, your tires are in so much better shape for the rest of the track. So he was just faster than anyone in qualifying through the S's. Then in the race, he could actually control the tire deck with his speed over those high-speed corners, fifth, sixth gear corners. And that was that, really. You know, the surprise for me, Tom, was how quick and how consistently quick were the two McLarens. I thought that they were going to be competitive, obviously, but that competitive, more competitive than the Ferrari, the Mercedes, Aston Martin. It was very good for McLaren, definitely. They were very strong, and especially Lando was super strong during the race as well, very consistent.
Well, so was Oscar, to be fair.
Yes, no, it was nice to see him on the podium. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And also, I mean, he was so fast in quali. He was, he did the best of the starts. He could have basically challenged Max on the first corner. But Max, being Max, he was very quick just very, very defensive and very aggressive on the outside of turn one and two. So, but anyway, it was an interesting race, you know. Okay, let's forget a bit about Max as well during the race. But after that, the battles for second, third, fourth, fifth position were really, really interesting between teammates as well. There was a lot of action, although with a clear dominator, which was Max. But we were all expecting that, Tom. After Singapore, I think no one really expected to arrive to Suzuka and seeing a different picture.
Now, as interested as I am to hear your views on Max and McLaren, I'm keener to get the inside word on Aston Martin, because Fernando in eighth, I mean, it's obviously better than Singapore, but it's nothing like how you started the season. And do we know any more about the DNF for Lance? Do we have more insight on that?
Well, I mean, there was obviously a concern about the rear wing, and that's why the team decided to stop him, you know. I mean, it was okay on Fernando's car, but it was not okay on Lance. He's really had a bad run of bad luck in the past few races, but we will see. I mean, Natalie, it's what it is, you know. At the end of the day, there's a lot of teams pushing for development. They have McLaren has made a huge step, and we shouldn't underestimate as well the rest, like Mercedes and Ferrari. And there will be circuits that are stronger than others. And definitely, I thought eighth position might sound not too spectacular, but actually, he was very close to the Mercedes and the Ferrari in the fight. Although strategic decisions because of the attack from the AlphaTauris with soft tires, you know, being undercut in the first stop, really led Fernando into a position of, and then he lost a lot of time with Ocon in that middle stint. Anyway, I thought that it was a very good race considering our pace, but we're working flat out. So it's not the end of the season. I mean, let's not forget this.
But have you had to manage the expectations of the team? I mean, not you personally, but the team as a whole, because there was a time when you went into a race weekend expecting, or at least certainly hoping for, a podium. And now there's had to be a major shift, hasn't there?
Well, I mean, I think that we are still approaching every race weekend with doing the same procedure and having the same expectations as the beginning of the year, knowing that the competition is fierce and it will be more difficult. But look at Zandvoort, for example. You know, we were then suddenly fighting for the victory at one point in the wet conditions, changeable conditions as well. So that hasn't changed in the team, and it's part of our approach to every Grand Prix. However, we know it's more difficult because there's more teams to fight for podium, but what are the differences between us? You know, it's 2/3 tenths and you're suddenly fighting for a podium, 2/3 tenths and you are like out of Q3. So it is fantastic to see the level of competition out there and how close it is between 4 or 5 teams. Let's try to forget about Max for once. And then we have a Singapore Grand Prix then, you know, where anyone could win. So Formula One is getting to a point that it will, and especially looking strong at the end of the year and for next year, where there will be, I think, 4 or 5 teams that could win potentially a race.
And we can conclude then that the new regulations that came in last year are actually doing their job.
I think that there's a combination of factors that have made the Formula One grid and will make the Formula One grid converge into a very tight few tenths, which I hopefully think that it will bring the driver effect back on top. You know, I think that we will see that the best drivers, that those drivers that give those that extra 1 or 2 tenths will be on demand, will be more important as well. And they will be the biggest differentiator in the future of Formula One. Hopefully, you know, I mean, that's what any driver wants, no? Just to be the key factor in the equation, which at the moment we have to admit that that race drivers are not. It's more the car.
Well, just look at Sergio Perez. Lando Norris has scored more points than Perez since the Austrian Grand Prix, since McLaren introduced their upgrade at the Austrian Grand Prix. Lando has outscored Perez. It's an extraordinary stat when you look at the difference in car performance. But look, what about Qatar then, team? First up, it is another sprint race. We've got a double of sprint races coming up, both in Qatar and then 2 weeks later in Austin. Pinks, are you all over the format for sprints? Remind us.
I love a sprint weekend because you get entertainment every single day. For anyone that can't remember, you get a practice session in the morning on Friday. You get quali on Friday for the race on Sunday. So that keeps you on the edge of your seat. Then Saturday is like a standalone sprint day, with qualifying and the sprint itself on the Saturday, and then the race is normal on a Sunday. What's not to love?
Yeah, I was quite critical of the sprints initially, but the more sprints we experience, the more fan I am of one of them. Although it's hectic for the Formula One teams and for the drivers as well, because they have no second really to play with setups or try new parts. You just have to gamble on many decisions at one point. But that's also the interesting part of the sprint races, is that the fact that the drivers have no time to get any better. You know, they have to adapt to what's thrown at them initially on the Friday, 1 hour, and then bang, it's after that, it's you just play with the front flap angle of the car during the whole weekend, because you cannot really change anything else after the first free practice session. And if your setup is not right, you as a driver, you just have to adapt to whatever decision you took after free practice one. And that's what I like about the sprint sessions, is that you see drivers adapting to cars that are not perfect, with many, many question marks.
And so it rewards the better drivers. Again, like you, what you were saying about the regulations rewarding the better drivers, do the sprint races do that as well?
Yes, I definitely think that if we went into a weekend, a race weekend, with no free practice whatsoever. Imagine that we arrive to Qatar next weekend and we go, forget free practice one. We went directly into the qualifying, you know, on the Friday afternoon, which is definitely the old qualifying format. We went directly into the qualifying. No free practice. Q1 straight away. I mean, how stressful and interesting would it be? Just to see drivers pushing it to the limit from Q1, not knowing the compounds, the setup, the circuit, you know? I mean, imagine Qatar, new surface, new possibly modified curbs. I don't know, but there should be some difference introduced from 2021. And then suddenly you just have to adapt to all that. I think the fans would love it. It would be massively stressful for the drivers, but how cool would it be?
It's kind of ironic then that Max hasn't been a huge fan of the sprint weekends, isn't it? I mean, I would have thought he'd have relished it.
Well, I think that the best drivers would adapt faster than anyone. And also the more experienced drivers. I mean, let's be realistic. Imagine if you're Piastri Oscar, and you are going to a Grand Prix with no free practice whatsoever. You know, it wouldn't, like Suzuka, it was his first ever Suzuka. The guy adapted fantastically well. We have simulators nowadays, so it's not like in the old days. But even so, it would definitely favor the experienced drivers, that's for sure.
Okay, well, let's just remind our listeners about LaSalle, because we had the inaugural race in Qatar back in 2021. We didn't run the race last year because of the Football World Cup. It is a MotoGP circuit. We know it's very bumpy. We also know there's been modifications, but most of those have been to the fan zone. So the fan area and overall capacity has risen. It has had some safety upgrades and it's got larger pit boxes, the most pit boxes on the calendar, TC, is that right?
Amazing. 50 pit boxes. The teams are going to have more space than they know what to do with.
So apparently the hospitality areas are insane, off the charts, the envy of every other racetrack in the world. So that's going to be very exciting to see. But in terms of the racetrack itself, Pedro, what do you know of it? You've driven it on the sim. Who do you think it's going to favour?
Well, I think that it is an extremely high-speed track, medium high-speed. It's dominated by a lot of fourth, fifth, sixth gear corners. So we are looking at minimum speeds of about between 180 and 220 kph. So in a way, it reminds me a lot about Suzuka, the type of speed, of change of direction, the setup that we run there will be quite similar. I think that the cars that were competitive in Suzuka will be competitive in Qatar because of the nature of layout of the track. There's many unknowns though, Natalie, so we don't really know the asphalt grip, how grippy it will be with a new surface, what type of changes, if any, to the curbs. There's many unknowns. However, what we know is that Pirelli are bringing the hardest compounds, the C1, C2, C3, which are basically the same they brought at Suzuka. And no matter how grippy it will be, it's a very demanding track on the tires and extremely demanding on the high-speed balance of the cars.
So given everything you've just said, Pedro, it's looking like a Max Verstappen Red Bull kind of track with Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri in the McLaren's closest. Is that your prediction going in?
No, I hope to be wrong. I mean, I just being scientific, if we look at the layout of the track by itself, then it should be a carryover from Suzuka. You know, whoever was quick in Suzuka should be competitive in Qatar. But having said that, there's so many unknowns, you know, and this year we've learned that we have no idea what's going on, really, to which cars will be competitive at which tracks. Who was going to say that Carlos Sainz, driving the Ferrari, would win in Singapore? It was unthinkable, especially considering the performance level of the Red Bull, the Aston Martin in Monaco. But we went to Singapore and the Ferraris dominated. So I don't know. I just think that there is a lot of reason to think that the Max will have an interesting and easy, possibly, evening in Qatar.
As a quick reminder, the first time that this race was run, Hamilton came first, Verstappen second, and Alonso third. I wonder what odds you'd get on that podium being repeated this time around. It is important to say, though, that Max Verstappen is very likely to clinch his third consecutive world title in the sprint in LaSalle. So there's a bit more entertainment and drama thrown in there. Verstappen has 400 points in the driver's standings, and that is 177 clear of his teammate Sergio Perez. There are 180 still on the table, so he needs three more points from the remaining six races. If Perez finishes outside the top three in the sprint, then Max is the champion, regardless of his position. So cue celebrations to carry on from those in Japan when Red Bull made it back-to-back world champions for the team for the sixth time in the team's history.
In summary, he will win it either Saturday or Sunday.
It's most likely Saturday.
And that will be a first, of course. No one has ever won the world title in a sprint race.
There you go. And now I tell you what, that will be a great pub quiz question in years to come. Another interesting stat is that Red Bull have never finished 1-2 in the table. And that was something that Damon reminded Christian Horner of amidst the wild celebrations in Suzuka. Christian was like, oh yeah, cheers for that, Damon. Cheers for that, Dampener. But the point is, they still have that to go for, which is, they've always got to have targets, haven't they? By their own very high standards.
Let's discuss that, because Perez is, 33 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton. We've got 6 races to go. 3 of those are sprint races. Do we think Perez can hold on to second, or is Hamilton Alonso behind Hamilton, can they beat Perez?
Slightly early in this season, I did make the prediction that Lewis Hamilton would finish second in the driver's table. And I got a lot of criticism, not least from our friends in Mexico. I understand why, because Sergio is an incredible driver. And I think he'll be hugely frustrated with the way things are going, because we all know that he's better than the results are suggesting. We all know that this is a rocket ship of a car. So he should be up there, and he absolutely should be coming second to Max Verstappen. Will it happen, though? Suzuka was a worrying time for Checo, because he qualified sort of down the order slightly. We thought he'll be able to carve his way field. But then I think you said it, TC, it seems slightly desperate on his part. He was going for moves that, as his own called them, were slightly optimistic.
I think that is the point. He is good enough and he has a good enough car to finish second. But it depends on how quickly he can shake off the 2 weekends that he's had. Actually, Singapore was a bad weekend as well, wasn't it? He crashed into Yuki Tsunoda on the opening lap and Alex Albon in Singapore. And then, of course, it was Lewis Hamilton on the opening lap in Japan and then Kevin Magnussen at the hairpin. He's got to stop crashing into people and just have a clean weekend. When we came back from the summer break, he said, what I need to do in the second half of this season is have clean weekends. And yes, he did that in Monza, didn't he? But it hasn't happened since. So he's got to overcome those issues. It's all purely psychological for him. And if he can, he will finish second. If he can't, he won't. It's as simple as that.
Yep, very true. And all the while, Lewis Hamilton is quietly creeping up on the inside, just, gathering decent hauls of points with plenty more on the table with the sprint weekend. Lewis knows how to win races. He can't do that at the moment, but he also knows how to come in and get podiums and, a decent bag of points at each race weekend. So I really wouldn't ever write Lewis off.
However, I would say that if you consider the season so far, how many points Checo has lost for crashes, for not qualifying well, for whatever problems he's encountered, and he's still lying second, The moment that things just go normal for him, there's no crashes, he finishes races, he picks up points regularly, it's clear that he will finish second. Let's not forget that for all of us, Aston Martin, Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren, we are all in 2-3 tenths. So we are going to fight for the same points and take many points from each other. So it won't be easy to make big strides in the next few races. So, but anyway, let's wait and see. It's an interesting sprint to the end of the season.
Well, and you mentioned sprint. And of course, just to emphasize that if Max finishes sixth in the sprint this coming Saturday, he is going to be a triple world champion. It's a phenomenal run. And then it's all eyes on, can Perez finish second? Do you think Verstappen will help Sergio finish second? Could we see him moving over, perhaps giving him a win? Is that even in his DNA? I doubt it somewhat, but Pinks is shaking her head.
I mean, I think the whole point of why Red Bull have been so dominant this season and Max is, there's a ruthless streak in both Max and Christian Horner. They're hugely competitive people. They're meticulous. They're thorough. They have an incredible work ethic. But crucially, there is that ruthless streak which winners need. And it isn't about having empathy for who finishes second. What's in it for Max to do that? I mean, I'm not a racing driver, Pedro. You tell me.
I think that It very much depends. If helping your teammate means that you are going to keep winning, that's fine, But if you're going to give away wins just for the sake of helping your teammate, it's not good for the team. It's not good for Max. It's not good for anyone. But the question really is once that Red Bull has already been crowned world champion in the Constructors' Championship and the Drivers' Championship in a few days, what is there really a need, or what is it to finish second for Checo? Does it mean a lot I mean, because if it means a lot, then I would understand, you know, that maybe Max will help. But it has to mean something special for the team and for Checo to finish second. I personally think that finishing second doesn't mean anything at all. You're still finishing behind your teammate. The team has already achieved the World Constructors Championship. So anyway, I wouldn't give it too much importance to the second.
I think for Checo, I think it's a huge thing to finish second. If he doesn't finish second in that RB19, the team will not look favourably. Every time they look at the results sheet at the end of the year, they're just going to be reminded of how Checo has misfired this year. And I think it could speed up his exit from the team, quite frankly. I think his future at Red Bull might even depend on that second place.
No, I agree. And that's why I ask, you know, it's fair enough. Does it mean a lot for Checo, you know, on a personal level to finish second? But what Checo wants is not to finish second because Max helped him to finish second. He wants to finish second because he deserves to be second, and he's capable of getting the points of finishing second, because even if he finishes second just because Max helps him, it won't change anything from Red Bull's future decision if he is not capable of actually fighting for his own corner. So anyway, you know, I think it's something for them to decide. I think at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what the team says. Sometimes you speak with your teammate and you say, look, Max, it means a lot to me. You know, I've been fighting for this. It's my dream. And it's not big being world champion, but it's still second. And it's always very nice for my CV or for my, I don't know, for my stories to my grandchildren, you know, to be able to explain that I finished second in the World Championship, Formula One World Championship. Then it's fine. I'm pretty sure Max will help. But it just depends. I just don't give too much credit to a second in a World Championship when your teammate has won so easily.
I totally agree with you that he's not going to want to be helped to second. But I also disagree that if Checo goes and says, you know, it would be great if I did, I don't think Max would help. And I don't mean that as a criticism of Max. This is the guy, and you'll need to remind me of the race, TC, where he risked everything for the fastest lap. And it didn't make any difference. It was just a statement of intent, and it was just his way of asserting himself all the more in the team to get the fastest lap right at the end of the race. He came in for an extra pit stop.
Well, he's done that a few times. But
but where was it? When was it when it made Adrian Newey really nervous? Because he came in. Do you remember Newey was telling us? He said, oh God, that was nerve-wracking.
Yes.
And it didn't make any difference to the constructors' points. It was just Max's way of saying, don't get any ideas. I take fastest lap as well.
But also just when you're thinking of the relationship between Max and Checo, think back to Brazil last year when, you know, Max was not helping Checo, was he? So maybe we're answering our own question here as to whether Max is going to help Checo finish second. But this is a nice segue, guys, into talking about Mercedes, because, of course, we saw Lewis Hamilton and George Russell. Well, they weren't talking straight after the race in Japan, were they? Because I think George felt that he'd been slightly done over by the team in terms of he was hoping that he could use Lewis Hamilton as a buffer to slow down Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. It didn't happen. Of course, they're now, everyone's claiming that, you know, all's well that ends well. I caught up with George in Japan. He is my guest on this week's F1 Beyond the Grid. And he is very confident about competing with Lewis Hamilton, the 7-time world champion.
Every single weekend I go out, practice, quali, race, you are directly compared to the greatest driver of all time. You know, that gives me the benchmark. And also, I don't think I've ever been pushed in my whole career like I've been pushed in these last year and a half. So to see that I'm swimming and swimming well gives me so much faith in myself, so much confidence that I always had. But there's sort of no doubt now. I truly believe in myself. The team believe in me. And that's been really down to the fact that I've been teammates with Lewis and held my own.
I tell you what is interesting, Tom, is that the dynamic between a 7-time world champion and Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, okay, he's no longer a rookie, but he's kind of more established in the team now. But I find it really interesting because at some point there's going to be a changing of the guard at that team. And it's how hard does Russell push it now in order to sort of gain authority, gain acceptance. And obviously that mistake in Singapore he said himself, didn't he? What am I, a rookie? That was a mistake that felt about inexperience. It didn't feel like a mistake that Lewis would make. So I feel that George is keen to assert himself at the moment. He wants to forget Singapore and say, you know what, I can be a team leader. And there's no doubt that he can. He's just not quite to the level of Lewis yet. But at some point, there's going to be a sort of handing over of the baton, if you like.
George Russell is one of my favorite drivers, I would say. And it's because he's been put together with Lewis Hamilton, and then we have managed to realize his true performance level, his true potential. And that's why we like, or I like him so much. It's just that he's stunningly fast, consistently fast, and a lot better, to be honest, than what I expected. He has the quality to become world champion.
What were you expecting, Pedro?
Well, I was expecting someone fast, definitely. I mean, if not, he wouldn't have achieved what he had achieved, but not as consistently fast and close to Lewis. There's some weekends where George, you would say, he has the edge on Lewis. Some others that Lewis has the edge on George. I thought that he was going to be close, but always one step behind Lewis. That was my feeling. And when he was at Williams, there was always the question mark of, well, let's see when he's together with Lewis. When he raced for Mercedes, when Lewis had COVID, you remember, and he substituted him in Bahrain. But we always said, well, it was a strange layout of Bahrain. It was a strange race as well. He was very competitive, but the Mercedes was dominant back then. And, Lewis was not racing. So now that we've had 1.5 seasons together with Lewis, you can say that he's performed at an incredible level. And he should be very proud. And he's definitely proud, you know. I think very good things will come out from George in the future as well.
But what is the message that he has to remain patient and wait a couple of years at least for Lewis Hamilton to retire and then he becomes number one? Or has he actually got to beat Lewis Hamilton to prove that he is the man to take the crown, if you like?
Don't forget, TC, he's been incredibly patient all his career. Remember how patient he was at Williams? When you could see like his mates in Alex up at Red Bull and Lando at McLaren and they, you know, getting decent results, he just held his own and just held his breath and said, no, I will get there eventually. I really like his attitude as well because he's modest and he's humble and prepared to take advice from Lewis, but he's not a pushover either. He's not overawed by being in a team with a multiple world champion. So I think, you know, that ticks a lot of boxes. He's level-headed. He's kind of mature. And he's prepared to be self-critical as well in the same way that, say, Charles is. Because, he will take himself off and talk to himself. Remember the start at Silverstone when Joe had the big crash. And George took a lot of responsibility for that in that moment. He was really sort of self-reflective. And, you know, it was the same in Singapore. He beat himself up about it. But he's also learned from it. So he's a work in progress. There's no doubt. I don't know how long that timeline is for him, but I guess it will be, as you say, when Lewis ultimately retires, that he will take over from the team. But he's got a long career ahead of him, no doubt.
But he already beat Lewis last year, no, to the points. So, I mean, first year and a pole position win. Lewis couldn't win any race that year. It was a very difficult car. Remember porpoising, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what he should wait for. He just has to keep finishing and doing the job he's doing. And eventually, when Mercedes brings a car that is more competitive, he will win. He's in such a good position right now. With that talent sitting under his legs, I think that he will have no limits in the future.
Okay, let's throw it forward to next year. Who is going to challenge Red Bull closer, do we think? McLaren? Mercedes? Ferrari or someone else?
You're forgetting about Aston Martin as well.
Of course.
We are all working flat out, Tom.
Talk about offending our guests.
Hamilton said in Japan, didn't he, that we, Mercedes, need the greatest 6 months of car development in our history if we're going to challenge Red Bull next year. Do we think they can do it? Do we think Ferrari are closer? Do we think McLaren are closer? Do we think Aston Martin, Pedro, I'm paying homage to you, do we think they can make another jump next year?
Well, I think that the most important thing really is to close the gap. You know, let's slowly creeping and closing the gap to the fastest car. You know, that's the aim of. I don't think on a linear development. So, you know, you see the gap to Red Bull and you think, okay, X amount of tenths, this translated into aerodynamic points means that we have to find X amount of points in the wind tunnel. I think that the development is not linear as that. There's a lot more things involved. The ground effect, rules mean that the car is very sensitive to ride height. So it's very circuit dependent or speed dependent, if you wish. And also, the moment you find more downforce, the tires work better in a better window. So it's not like, sometimes we just concentrate on the amount of downforce of wind tunnel points. It's a lot more complex than that. But I think that the ultimate goal is what we were always discussing, is just closing the gap to Red Bull. Will that be enough for some teams to overtake in 2024? We don't know, really. I mean, but that's the beauty about Formula One, you know? I mean, how much more downforce is Red Bull going to find in the next few months? Have they hit already their ceiling? You know, there's so many questions that we should ask. It's not only what we can find, but what can they find as well?
Well, I mean, Red Bull won the first race of this season, Bahrain, by 30 seconds. We've seen a lot of jostling for position behind them between Ferrari, Mercedes, Aston Martin and McLaren. But I'm not convinced anyone has actually closed the gap. Okay, Max won the Japanese Grand Prix by 19.7 seconds. I don't think he was pushing in those last laps. And I'm sure he could have been nigh on 30 seconds ahead of Lando Norris if he'd wanted to be. That's a bit of a warning shot for everyone else, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, those type of tracks, and possibly Qatar is similar this weekend, it will be difficult to beat them. But what we have found out and is that they are human, that they have circuits where the car is not as dominant like Singapore. So it means that they have, in some speed corners, some type of corners, they are not the fastest car. This is a bit of a bright light at the end of the tunnel for all of us, in the sense that if we develop our car in a very wide window, we can actually get Red Bull as well, or close the gap, you know, initially. But we will see. We will see, Tom. At the end of the day, we don't know how much they will develop the car for next year. So it's a long shot.
There were some team orders that actually went under the radar at the end of the Japanese Grand Prix. And that specifically was Alpine's decision to switch Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon on the final lap. Gasly, you may remember, was running in ninth towards the end of the race, having been given the green light to pass Ocon earlier to push his fresh hard tyres and chase Fernando Alonso in P8. When it became clear he was unable to catch Fernando, Alpine asked Gasly to give Ocon the position back. He did so on the final corner, but the Frenchman was clearly unhappy with this decision.
Can we swap back around, please?
Wait, what the You're kidding me. What are you saying? Like, I was faster. I'm on pressure robbery. Would have overtaken him anyway.
Yeah, we discussed it in the office. Let's please swap around, please.
You confirm you want to swap?
Affirm, mate. Affirm, please.
Complete joke.
Awkward, testy racing drivers, Pedro. It seemed pretty clear that he should give the position back because Ocon had moved over for him. I think it was at the exit of 130R. Earlier in the race so that he could have a crack at Fernando. He didn't get past Fernando, so you swap back. That is the rule within their team. I'm not quite sure what Gasly didn't understand.
Yes, I think that what we need to understand here is that all of the teams have what we call the rules of engagement. And there is some clear rules between teammates as to what should happen in situations like this. So I don't know what rules of engagement Alpine has, you know, but what I know is that in my whole career, I knew exactly at that point, if I'm given a position, I'm not fighting for with my teammate for a position, I will have to give it back later on in the race if I don't make positions up the grid, up the ladder. So yeah, I don't really know what the problem is, to be honest, Tom. You know, I mean, there is some clear rules of engagement. You just have to comply with them. You always have to think that the team is more important than the driver. And it's exactly the same to finish. If you have Gasly and Ocon or Gasly, it's the same for the team constructors point. So Rules of engagement are there for a reason, and it's up to the drivers really to comply with them and for the team to remind them about them.
Ocon certainly in agreement with you. He responded afterwards saying, I've been with the team for 4 years. The rule has always been the same. If you swap the position, if you don't get the car in front, then you have to switch back before the end.
There you go.
I'm sure he understands now. I'm sure the debrief would have made it clear to Gasly.
But one important thing is that Gasly did let Ocon through, because you can complain, you cannot be, you know, you can say whatever you want on the radio, but bottom line is that Gasly did what he was told, which is the most important thing for a team.
I tell you what, there's not much in it in terms of their head-to-head though, TC. Qualifying, Ocon 7, Gasly 9. Race, Ocon 6, Gasly 7.
And they've both had a third place. Ocon finishing on the podium in Monaco and Gasly doing it, of course, at Zandvoort. It's really close. You know, they're two Frenchmen driving for a French team with very little to separate them. There's always going to be fireworks, I guess.
We said in the build-up to this relationship, we know when it was announced, we thought, oh no, these guys have got history. This is going to be terrible. And actually, it hasn't. They've been pretty civilized throughout. Very competitive, but it hasn't been the fireworks that we were predicting.
Yeah, I thought that Gasly has done very well as well. You know, first year in a new team against a very strong teammate such as Ocon, and he's been up there with him fighting, you know, nearly every Grand Prix. So I'm very impressed by Gasly's job this season.
Something very significant is happening in Milton Keynes. As we speak, Milton Keynes in the UK, because Daniel Ricciardo is driving the Red Bull simulator today to find out whether he is going to be fit for the Qatar Grand Prix. And we will find out later in the week how he's got on. Pedro, how realistic are these simulators in terms of him finding out whether his left hand is strong enough to do a race?
Well, they are very, very, very realistic, especially on the power steering level, assistance levels. So Red Bull will be able to tune the power assistance to a level where they think it's realistic. They can even go further and make it even harder for Daniel, so that to realize, well, if he had to push harder, would he have the strength, the needed strength? So I think that will be very clarifying if he's capable or not to sustain the G-force levels, or especially the power, you know, the strength needed in the corners of Qatar. You remember when at the beginning of the season, Lance broke his wrist and he went into the simulator, and that was the defining factor really for the team to get Lance flying into Bahrain and being ready for the race. And he was ready. He was just about to be ready, but it was because the simulator test went well for him.
Well, we're going to find out very quickly whether Daniel will be in Qatar or not. And that will, I suppose, there's one man who's really hoping that he's just still a little bit sore, probably, is Liam Lawson. What a phenomenal debut few races he's had in the AlphaTauri. Pedro, were you surprised when AlphaTauri came out and confirmed Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo for 2024, leaving Lawson on the sidelines?
Well, not really, because I think that poor Daniel, I mean, he hasn't had really a proper crack into the season, really. Also, Yuki has done a fantastic job this season. So, and Liam has also done a great job the few races that he's been there. I mean, actually, he has surprised many people, including myself. But would you take the gamble of, you know, I mean, why would you get Daniel out of the equation or Yuki? Have they done something particularly wrong to lose their jobs? No. But having said that, I think Liam has made a very good, has helped his cause massively for the future. It's not that he will disappear from the Red Bull lineup. You know, I think that he will be considered heavily for the future. I thought giving Daniel a second opportunity after his crash, his broken hand, is fair. Yuki deserves that race drive for sure after what he's done, especially this last season. So all in all, it's a problem for Red Bull in a way, for AlphaTauri, because they have now three very good drivers. They had to decide on two.
I don't think Red Bull had any other choice but to keep Daniel and Yuki. And I suppose The only issue comes in whether Liam thought he was ever in with the chance, because I don't believe he ever was. I think that this was his opportunity to show himself in the shop window, which he did a brilliant job of doing. And he's staked his claim for the future. He's still only 21. I mean, he's going to have a very bright future. And this will be remembered. Being able to come in and hit the ground running in the way that he did was phenomenal. But to Pedro's point, was he ever really going to unseat a multiple race winner in Daniel, or someone that's really stepped up since Nyck de Vries left? In fact, when Nyck de Vries joined, Yuki Tsunoda really upped his game because he knew he was under pressure, and he's delivered in a very difficult car. The car's only really come good, ironically, with the upgrades since Liam's got into it. So it's quite difficult to compare them anyway.
I agree, fully agree.
But what is the job of that team? Is it to develop young drivers?
Yeah, but as we've seen, TC, it is to develop young drivers, but they've got programs in place to do that. But you equally need an experienced driver alongside a new young driver in order to share data, develop the car, and the guy on the other side of the garage to you. Like, Daniel's worth his weight in gold to that team in terms of marketing, in terms of experience, in terms of morale.
Pinks, I'm in no way dissing Daniel Ricciardo in saying that. I'm wondering, there are four Red Bull drivers on the grid. One of them isn't performing as well as he should at the moment, and that is Sergio Perez. So I'm thinking, in the corridors of power in Salzburg, actually, should Daniel Ricciardo step up to the big team, to Red Bull Racing for 2024, leaving Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda at AlphaTauri? That's really, I think, the question that they are asking themselves.
Well, I would agree. And I think, had Daniel not had that really unfortunate crash, and had he come in and put in really solid performances for AlphaTauri, then that's what would be happening. Whether he's got the opportunity in the last six races, I guess he has. If he comes back for Qatar, I mean, today is a big day for him. Personally, would be saying, don't rush it. Like, you don't have to prove yourself, although I'm contradicting myself there, because if he does put in a phenomenal performance at AlphaTauri, which we know he's capable of, then yes, he is putting pressure on Sergio Perez. And then you've got room for Liam Lawson as well in the junior team.
Tom, you remember when we had Christian Horner here in F1 Nation? What he said was very interesting. He said that, you know, after the Silverstone Grand Prix, there was a test. And Daniel, after, I think he said 11 laps or 9, 11 laps, he did times capable of being in the top five in the grid for the British Grand Prix. So I think that gave Daniel a chance in AlphaTauri, given the fact that they want to be covered just in case whatever happened with Checo. You know, if they had no doubts that Checo would be like, you know, close to Max, then they wouldn't have taken Daniel. But the fact that they are not sure what can happen in the future, and that's a bit what Christian told us. So all in all, what I'm saying is AlphaTauri is a team meant to give young drivers opportunities, yes, but I think that they're using it for a different purpose at this moment in time.
Christian was being very diplomatic, I felt, when he came on the show a couple of months ago, though, Pedro. I felt he was still talking about 2025, not 2024. And I'm just wondering whether they need to accelerate that if Checo doesn't get it together in these last six races. But we haven't got long to wait, have we?
It is a big if, because we know Checo can do it. We know he's got the talent.
Oh, think back to the opening four races, Pinks. Those opening races of the season, he won two races. It was sensational. So, but equally, he's got to deliver.
But the races that Checo, if Checo doesn't crash on the first few laps or has a problem or has to do an extra pit stop for whatever reason, a front wing, the races that he's finished without any trouble, even if he's qualified very, very much at the back, he's always finished in the top four, top five, or has been in the podium. So all he needs to do really is to be Checo on a Sunday and don't get too anxious on a Saturday. It doesn't really matter where he will qualify. He will always be fighting for a podium at the end of the race if he doesn't have a first lap crash. He has the pace, you know, in the races. I mean, there's no question about that. There's no reason to panic.
Before you boys go anywhere, there's a couple of other bits of business that I want to discuss. Jess Hawkins. Pedro, this is a huge day for Aston Martin, for Jess, for women in motorsport, because Jess became the first woman to test an F1 car since 2018 when she drove the AMR21 in Budapest. How did she get on? What can we expect from her in the future? Jess is a good mate of mine. I'm so proud of her. I think the future's bright. And I think it's just, I don't know, it's just a shot in the arm for any woman out there thinking of a future in Formula One. I think it's a great statement from the team, from Jess, and from motorsport, from Formula One generally.
Absolutely, Natalie. I'm very glad you asked this question because, I mean, Jessica has been a very inspirational part of the team, and what she did in Budapest was very impressive. Not only because she jumped into a Formula One car, but I would give her credit for how she prepared that test in the simulator, in a very professional manner, giving it 100%. And then she was actually very, very strong in the test. She was fast straight away. She got used to it immediately. So very impressive indeed. We were all very proud of her, really.
Oh, that is music to my ears. That is so cool to hear.
No, she's an incredible woman, I would say, an incredible person. And one thing that I loved from her is the fact that she worked very hard to prepare for that test. But when she came out of the car, the first thing she said, she thanked the team for how much time they gave her and how hard they had worked for her, you know, in the team. It's not that she only worked hard, that she thanked the people for working hard for her. And this is something that I really, really appreciate and just gives you a glimpse of who Jessica Hawkins is and how much we love her in the team.
I would love to see her have another test as well.
Definitely.
Continue the journey. See how far she can go. See how she develops from one test to the next. And let's face it, Pedro, she had a great tutor in you, Pedro. Of course, I'm thinking of, you know, the podium finisher in the Hungarian Grand Prix all those years ago.
She doesn't need tutors like myself. I think she's more than capable of learning faster and alone. But she's a quick learner as well. And she's very fit. There's something that people don't realize. I mean, she's very strong as well. She works very hard. So, yeah, I'm with you guys. I really hope that she has more opportunities.
Great stuff. That is so good to hear. Now, talking of having to learn fast, Logan Sargeant has had a tough rookie year at Williams. And I wanted to get your thoughts before we go just on what he needs to do and how the team need to support him, because I'm hearing from the inside that they really do want to support him. They really want to get the best out of him. My heart sank when I saw him crash in quali in Japan. I just thought, God, it just must be soul destroying for him to step out of the car, the whole pit lane to have to stop with a red flag because of something that he's done, and how mentally you overcome those challenges. I mean, it's going to be hard for him, but hopefully he's got the support he needs to get there.
Yeah, I think that the situation with Logan is quite clear to me, that he has the backing from the team, the support from everyone at the Williams team. They're all trying to help him find the consistency he needs. And when you as a racing driver feel that level of support, it makes your life a lot easier. So I don't think that he's under pressure for sure, but he has the backing from the team. And I remember in 2006 when I was replacing Juan Pablo Montoya, and it was like I was never given more than one Grand Prix at a time. And after each Grand Prix, I was told, you will have another opportunity. You will have another opportunity. Lewis Hamilton was waiting on the bench to replace me. So that was making me very anxious. And I think that really cost me a lot of speed, I would say, or confidence. So with Logan, it's very different. He has the team confidence, backing, support. James Bowles is very good at that as well. And he's been, he knows how to treat young drivers. So I'm very confident that Logan will manage to keep his drive for next year.
Can I ask you both one question, yes or no? Should rookies be given more than 1 year in the sport?
It very much depends also for which team do you drive for. You know, there are teams that have are more patient than others. Red Bull doesn't have that patience. I mean, if you look at Nyck de Vries, you know, after a few races, he was out. So it very much depends who you drive for and how much trust they have in your capabilities.
But Formula One is a meritocracy. Only the best drivers are meant to be in Formula One. And if you're a rookie and you're good enough, look at Oscar Piastri, you fly. And if you're not good enough, then you don't survive. It's a harsh business, but that is what Formula One is. And actually, thinking of Logan Sargeant, he appreciates that, understands that as well as anyone. He uses the word meritocracy when describing what he's got to do to stay in Formula One. He understands that. Rookies understand that. I think every driver understands that. All right, then, let's talk predictions for this weekend. It is a sprint race, so we'll have to include the sprint and the Grand Prix. I need six names from all of us, really. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first, man, because I think that I have to be consistent with what I've said in this show. And the thing is that my prediction for Sunday is the copy-paste from the podium in Suzuka. Max winning, Lando and Oscar. And there's no question mark whatsoever that Max will win the championship on a Saturday. Definitely. So, unfortunately, not a very interesting prediction from my side.
And do you think that'll be the same in the sprint as well on Saturday, that top three?
Should be, yes. It might be a bit different because it will be more dependent on the first lap performance from the drivers, you know. There's no pit stop really to play strategies, but I will still go for the same.
Okay, Verstappen, Norris, Piastri for Pedro. Pinks?
Well, I'm going to really mix it up for the sprint because I think that's kind of what sprint's for. I'm going to say that there'll be a Ferrari, a Mercedes and an Aston Martin up there.
Nice. Nice, Natalie.
Go on, give us some names. What's happened to Max?
And Checo, what happened with Checo? I mean, you've just...
Oh, yeah, no, Max, I want him to win it. Yeah, and the, oh, yeah. Okay, so Max is going to win it, but then I think that Lewis will get on the podium, and I think that Charles will get on the podium. Oh, no, what about Aston Martin? I want Fernando up there as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to get Max out again.
But I do have to say, the cut and paste from Pedro's prediction for the race suits me as well. I think the McLarens will be up there. I think they're just on this great run of form, and I think it will continue in Qatar.
Well, I think Max is going to win the sprint, and he's going to win the championship at the same time. I don't know. I feel that Lando Norris is due his first win in Formula One, and if that car,
well, yeah,
is as good as we think it's going to be, a little bit of misfortune, maybe. You know, remember we had those four punches 2 years ago? Just a little bit of misfortune for Max, and Norris is in there. So I'm going to go a Norris victory this weekend.
Wow. You've actually thought about this.
Closely pursued by his teammate, Oscar Piastri. And then I think Checo Perez is going to have dusted himself down after Singapore and Japan, and he's going to put in a solid performance, and he's going to be on the third step of the podium on Sunday. So it's Norris, Piastri and Perez, only because some kind of misfortune has fallen the way of Max Verstappen.
So you realize that by giving that prediction, you're saying that Max will win on Saturday, the World Championship?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he will win it on Saturday. Correct. Let's check in with our fantasy team now, F1 Nation Racing. We finished with 273 points in Suzuka, which moved us up the standings for the second race in a row. We're now 761st in the F1 Nation World Championship. MLN Racing continues to lead the way with a 41-point advantage over the Incident 2.0 in second, but we have a new team in P3 because Radio Check has leapfrogged Formel Mainz and Blank BGP into the final podium position, so that battle is getting really spicy. And we're going to shake things up ourselves for Qatar and take a few risks based on some of our rather bold podium predictions. Lewis Hamilton is coming in for Max Verstappen. We've also replaced Fernando Alonso, sorry Pedro, with Carlos Sainz. And we've brought Mercedes in for Red Bull as one of our constructors. So that's a lineup of Hamilton, Sainz, Norris, Piastri and Albon, with Mercedes and McLaren as our teams. Let's see if our gamble pays off. Now remember, F1 Fantasy is free to play and you can join our league at any time. Just go to fantasy.formula1.com and search for the F1 Nation World Championship to compete against us and other listeners. And remember, Qatar is a sprint weekend, so you'll need to make any changes to your team before the start of qualifying for Sunday's race on Friday. Well, guys, thanks very much for your time. It's been great to have you on the show. Thank you for listening at home. And don't forget to catch this week's F1 Beyond the Grid with George Russell. That's available from Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. But we'll be back next Monday with our review of the Qatar Grand Prix. But for now, F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.
Cheerio.
So